It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, welcoming you in the front door of 2 hours of our excellent program about computers. And today we're going to be talking in particular about a great organization that helps women who are entrepreneurs to get up, get going, and conquer. We'll also be getting in touch with Mike Brennan to find out the top news topics, and we'll be talking about travel and how to handle your electronic gadgets while you do. All that coming up on the Internet Advisor. So good to be back with you here live at the Internet Advisor. And thank you for joining us again, allowing us into your lives as we have for the past 16 years. Gary Baker, my compadre, is with me here in studio.
I am so glad you're back. I every once in a while I fancy sitting in the big chair, but I like it sitting right here when I don't have to do all the button pushing.
I enjoy not having to call in on whatever phone line it can have. The first one was two weeks ago, the International Airport in Seattle, Air Alaska, waiting to fly over to Victoria. And then, Cal, we talked last week. I was in my sister's house. It's on Vancouver Island, near the city of Comox.
And because of Cal, talking about chocolate and being from out there, we all got our little present here today.
So I brought from the famous Rogers Chocolate. If you ever make your way to Victoria, you can also do it online, by the way. Outstanding chocolate products there. I brought some dark chocolate Bing cherries just to give the guys a little bit of energy as well. And our guest in studio, including the lovely, the inimitable Emily Hay, is with us from Hay There Social Media. Good to have you, Emily.
Thanks, Foster. What a lovely intro.
Oh, it always is. What a lovely thing to return to. Thank you so much for joining us today. And matter of fact, you have a very kind of a neat relationship to the guests that we're going to be talking with a little bit. Some of the folks at Inforum, it's an organization that helps women kind of go from the conception of their ideas for their business right to the commercialization. We'll be talking about that process coming up. But Cal, you challenged me last week when I was on the phone with you guys at the beginning of the program to talk about what it's like to travel with electronics nowadays. And what was it? I think you asked me what did I take on the trip. And
what did you take with you that you most said, this is absolutely what I must have when I travel? And what did you take that you could say, I really don't need that anymore?
It's interesting. I slimmed down to the extent that I brought my MacBook Pro because I had a movie that I downloaded from iTunes that I wanted to watch on the plane. And that turned out to be good to have. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was my iPhone. And I was very happy that's all I had because it didn't weigh that much. I think if I had had an ultra-portable computer, it might have been a little bit lighter, to carry. But no, it's not that much. The MacBook Pro is, the 13-inch is not that heavy on it. What is it? 2-3 pounds?
It's probably about three and a half.
Yeah, but it's not much. It's not that big. The issue for me, and interesting, I posted it as a news note because if you go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, one is the remarks that Shane made. Shane Hamlin, who's on with us, he went to Cancun, and he had all sorts of grief with his cell phone system, etc. And then my reflections on my travels, and the two things that I said were really the issues were not so much the equipment you take with you, and I would just suggest travel as light as you possibly can. But cell phones, especially smartphones, are almost they're a necessity when you travel. And when you think of it, a good-sized smartphone, you could probably leave the laptop behind if you're not going to be doing any business. Because I watch people in airports clap on a headset and watch a movie and watch it very comfortably. But the issue is, the two things I put down there was power. Mm-hmm. How long will your battery life last? And I got to a couple of situations where I was on a ragged edge of, you know, after a five-hour flight of...
Watching movies.
Movies or whatever it was, you know, of the thing having drawn down quite mm-hmm. a good deal. And then the issue is, where do you plug in? Now, you've traveled a lot, Gary. Emily, you try to travel?
Yeah, even to the UK, you know, mobiles yeah. and, yeah.
And you've got to find a place to plug in. That's the big deal. So if you're planning your trip and you've got devices with you, scout out the plugs because you are going to be fighting for a place to power up.
Yeah, and in the airports today, as you mentioned on the phone, they have charging stations, and they have them in almost every airport, everyone that I've been in
much,
lately.
Much better so, now. Yeah. Delta had some really nice ones. Air Alaska, where I was mm-hmm. when I called you, like every third seat had this great set of plugs you could power up with. And it's whatever you take with you, Cal, you got to be able to power it. Or have an extra battery along.
Well, you know, next month in June, I'm going to be doing a lot of traveling. And one of the places I have to go to is Atlanta. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't travel. I got to admit, I don't travel very light. But I try to slim down as much as possible. I will have two laptops with me.
Two?
I'll have an iPhone. I'll have my iPad. And
those two laptops?
Yes.
So you're going to have four devices in all?
Yes. I have to have one Windows and one Mac just because of the nature of my job.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
So, he has to have the Windows. He wants to have the Mac, and that's the difference, right?
You are so close, it's not even funny.
I thought I'd say it before you did.
Now, I'm curious, if you travel that way, why don't you dual boot off the Mac? You know, where you can use Boot Camp to go into the Windows.
I'm a purist, believe it or not. I really
and
believe
for that you will be having four different trays when you go through TSA.
It's okay.
Take your shoes off, put them in one, and then there'll be like a line of all these devices. And
it worked last year. The biggest problem they had with me last year when I went through TSA was not the laptops, not the electronic devices. It was, you're going to Atlanta in June with a winter coat.
Oh, my. Oh, because of
that.
Your being doing ice skating.
Ice
yes.
skating.
Yeah, the guy's like, a winter coat? I go like, yeah. He goes like, in June? I go, yeah. He says, in Atlanta? I go, yeah. He goes, what the heck
sir,
do you do?
You're step
playing
over
with
here,
him.
Please.
Yeah, you're just playing with them.
So I pulled out my card from USFSA and showed him, and he goes like, okay.
Well, you know, one other thing I'll say, because we're getting out of time here, and that is in terms of wireless. And Shane had a terrible problem in Mexico finding free wireless. In Canada, I did not. My sister had a great wireless setup, so I could use the computer there. I put my phone on airplane mode to make sure it didn't accidentally lock into the local system.
It can cost you a lot before you know it.
Please keep that in mind, folks. So you can read it on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and the news items are there. Back in just a moment to talk with the folks from Inforum. Eddie Rudell is on a little bit of a time away, vacation with his family. It's only fair that he gets to have a little time off as well. Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and Emily Hay are our folks who are in studio right now. And we're also delighted to be talking with you today about Inforum. It's an organization that we're going to find out more about now that has a very special role in helping women who are moving into the field of being entrepreneurs to get their feet on the ground and get going. And with us right now on the line, we're delighted to welcome Terry Barclay, who has been the CEO and president, I believe I have that right, of Inforum since the year 2001. Terry, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Terry, thumbnail, what is Inforum?
Inforum is a leading professional organization for women that's focused on creating strategic connections and accelerating careers.
Woohoo! That is a compact statement. Now, let's break that down a little bit. Creating strategic connections. How do you do that kind of thing, and what does that mean?
Oh, we have lots of different ways we go about doing that, but you know, you've heard people say the way to get it's who you know that helps you get ahead. Well, Inforum is all about making sure that women have the right people in their who they know category.
I see. Is it kind of like a LinkedIn, but particularly for women?
Yes. Yes.
LinkedIn, by the way, for our audience, LinkedIn is kind of like the business interchange.
But it's not really an association.
No.
And it's not really, there's no face-to-face. We're informed us a lot more than LinkedIn ever would.
But LinkedIn was kind of like that ground where people got together for business, not for like a Facebook kind of a relationship.
To exchange contact information.
And Emily, hey, you and their social media are part of Inforum?
Well, I'm a happy member.
You're a happy member.
Yeah, I learned about Inforum when I was in more of a corporate environment, and now as my own business owner, even as a small business owner, Inforum is a fantastic resource for me.
Well, how has it been a resource for you along the lines of what Terry's talking about?
Well, again, in just a thumbnail, from luncheons to the contacts to the website, you can get lost on the website. There's so many amazing resources there. So it's something that I'm very thankful that we have in the area.
How did it accelerate your career? Because that's one of the things that Terry Barkley was talking about it doing.
Well, to Terry's point, I mean, contacts is a huge thing. But I was just listening to a webinar yesterday hosted by Inforum, learning about more entrepreneurial programs, empowering women to, again, whether you have just an idea or whether you're in maybe a newer phase of your business but want to accelerate it, there's just more resources through Inforum than traditional luncheon and networking sessions.
Okay. Now, there's some other aspects of Inforum, Terry, that maybe you can help us to understand, because I understand that it was in 2002 that you helped to form something called Inforum Center for Leadership, which is not exactly the same as Inforum, but how does it differ?
Oh, Inforum Center for Leadership is sort of the education and the research arm.
I got you.
And what our goal is there, our focus is developing leadership development programs for women that meet them at every stage in their career, whether they're an emerging leader just out of college, making that transition sort of from backpack to briefcase, all the way up to very senior executives whose next step is getting on a for-profit corporate board.
Mm. Now, by the way, we have one of those people who entered that process as well in studio with us, and that is Dr. Megan Frost, I believe. My notes are sliding. There we go. Dr. Megan Frost, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, it's nice to be here.
You came down to experience spring, I understand.
It snowed 6 inches yesterday in the Upper Peninsula.
She lives in, you're at Michigan Technological University in Houghton.
Correct.
And beautiful place. I have a dear friend of mine up there who said there are still 12-foot snowbanks up in Calumet.
Yeah, there are indeed.
6 inches of snow yesterday. Oh,
it kind of reinforces her last name, doesn't it?
Frost? Oh, yeah. Dear. Oh, that
well, and I believe bad. The that area, in fact, I think it was up at Calumet or maybe Mohawk, that has the record for the largest or highest record annual snowfall.
Oh, they have the big thermometer up there. I think it goes up around 300 inches. So.
Yeah.
You're going to take the notion of spring with you, right?
Absolutely.
And lots of pictures. It actually exists, folks. You may see
it's coming
in June.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get involved in Forum?
The way that I got involved in this program is our local smart zone, the MTech Smart Zone in Houghton, sent out a call for people that would be interested in trying to commercialize technology. And I'm on the faculty at Michigan Tech. I'm a professor, assistant professor of biomedical engineering, and we have technology we've been working on developing, and it seemed like a really exciting opportunity. I know virtually nothing about business, coming from a chemistry and a biology background in engineering, and the opportunity to have somebody actually speed up the process of acquiring some kind of business knowledge. Was
You're also an inventor, did I understand?
Yes, I am.
So there's also a something that you're learning how to, what, commercialize?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my doing R&D research in around 1996. And it's part of the job. You learn and you generate new technology. And usually it just sits on the shelf then until someone else comes along to develop it.
Is it kind of like you want to own that and move that forward yourself rather than just leave it for somebody else?
It's not so much the ownership issue, although that is a component of it, but it's when you have an idea that you get really excited about and you see the potential for it, I would like to see it pushed forward rather than sitting still.
So now is this something you can tell us about? I mean, just us here, you know, we keep it a secret.
Is this the iWatch?
Even better than the iWatch.
Is it
something you can talk about? Because we promote it a little bit.
Do you want to invest in it?
There might be investors out there.
Now we're talking.
I'd be willing to invest if it's synthetic Bing cherries covered with chocolate.
The technology that we're developing is related to implantable polymers that should control and mediate the biological response to the implanted material. So if you think about when you skin your knee and you start bleeding, the blood will form a clot, which in mm-hmm. some situations is very beneficial. Mm-hmm. But if you're putting a device in the body that needs to right. serve some purpose, like a vascular graft or like a sensor, the clot formation can be very detrimental to that process.
Right, exactly.
And actually cause more medical problems than the problem was intended to solve.
As a matter of fact, a lot of the times you have to be working with the body and kind of keeping the body from fighting against what you're doing, the implant, whatever it may be.
Absolutely. And so the technology that we have developed is a means by which we can very carefully tune and control the biological response. And so there are a lot of devices this could be applied to, mm-hmm. and we're working on developing some of that technology to make it actually useful for a real implant.
Now, Terry, we don't have much time with you because we're going to keep Dr. Frost here for just a moment longer, but I wanted to ask you about some of the other aspects of your organization, like Engage and Activate, which are two other aspects.
Well, what Megan's talking about is what we'd really like to get the word out about, because the economic engine of Michigan, we know, is going to be so much more dependent on incredibly innovative startup companies
right.
built around ideas like Megan's.
Right.
And that's what Engage is all about. It's about providing a place where women can do that and learn to do that while they keep their day jobs.
Mm.
Because the schedule of the class is such that you don't have to quit your job to come do it. So we're accepting
Excellent.
Applications now. We have scholarships. We want to grow Michigan's next economy by getting ideas like Megan's commercialized and to market. And, you know, it's really important that women play a role in this space, because only 3% of tech startups are led by women, and male-led ventures usually start with 27 times the capital.
Oof.
So we want to get the financing that Megan needs to get her business going.
Absolutely. I can see the twinkle in her eye. I think she agrees with you wholeheartedly on that. Just kind of quickly, what is Activate, which is another one of your programs, and how does that interface with this?
This Activate is the program that Megan's participating in right now.
Right.
It's a 10-month class
that
covers 40 topics, provides coaches, connections to resources within the state, that takes people from idea generation all the way through the mechanics of starting the business
mm-hmm.
and getting that business launched.
Megan, how long have you been involved in the process now?
Our Activate session started in August last year.
Oh, wow.
So very far into it. Our last session ends June 1st.
June 1st, okay. I want to come back to talk about that. Terry, thank you so much for being involved, but quickly, how did you get involved? Just quickly, how did you get involved in Inforum?
We saw a need. Oh, how did I get involved in Inforum?
Wait, that may take a little longer.
Yeah, no, I think there's an incredible need and incredible opportunity in this area.
There is, and you have done a tremendous job with this organization to help women not only have the dream, but make that dream become real, and in the process, helping build our state. Terry Barkley, thank you so much for being with us. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. You know, Gary, you and I have been doing this going on 16 years, but there's a person who would star on this program when she was a wee lass, and something important is about to happen tomorrow.
That's correct. My daughter, Lauren, her very first time on the show, she was 5 years old, and she made a website for her mom for Mother's Day.
That's right.
And she came on the air to tell us about it. That's right. And so she turns 21.
Oh my goodness!
Tomorrow, so
I'm feeling very old suddenly. Where's my glucosamine?
And she used to do the Teen Tech segment here on the Internet Advisor, and so every once a month, she'd come on for 15 minutes and talk about all the technology the teens.
On that one time, and she was helping us with interpreting some of the shorthand that kids use on. Texting,
yes.
Like parent over shoulder, wasn't that one?
Yes.
POS.
So I said, oh, really? So now when I see that, I know that you're telling the person on the other end of the text that I'm standing there watching, better be careful.
Well, happy 21st birthday to you, Lauren. You are a star in our eyes any way you cut it. But Lauren is one of the stars here of our show for many years, and she is now stepping into adulthood at 21 officially tomorrow.
She's just finishing up her junior year at Michigan and going to spend some time in Costa Rica leading a mission trip.
Oh, wonderful.
And then down to Rio de Janeiro for a class. I don't know why she's doing that. Yeah, 3-week class. She's staying for World Youth Day and seeing the Pope, and then she's going to spend two more weeks
No kidding,
traveling around the country down there. So,
Is she going to take any technology with her?
Oh, I'm sure she will.
You're thinking of going along?
Well, no. I'm sure she'll be able to Skype back and show you all the groovy stuff that's going on.
I hope so.
Maybe just walk up with the laptop, hold in front of the Pope, you go, Domini, Domini, and bless you.
She's got her little her iPad, I think she'll take with her. And I don't think she'll take the laptop, although she has a class down there. I mean, she's trying to convince me this is a real class. She gets 3 credits for it. Sure.
Well, congratulations to you, Lauren. By the way, we're talking about getting women like Lauren, getting them a step up and into the world of entrepreneurship. And we were talking in the first segment with Terry Barkley, who is the current CEO of Inforum. And they're the people who have created the Inforum Center for Leadership. And their idea is to create, through their various programs, position Michigan as a Midwest hub for high-growth women entrepreneurs. And we have one of those high-growth women entrepreneurs. Have you ever been described as that, Dr. Frost?
No, I never have.
Just the technology is high-growth. That's we want to make sure that people understand this.
Dr. Megan Frost is with us from Michigan Technological University in Houghton, where they had 6 inches of snow yesterday. But we understand. We have congratulations to you. You just attained tenure there.
Yes, I did. Yesterday, the Board of Control voted on it and made it legal.
Congratulations.
Cool. So you have a job next year.
I do have a job next year, which is great.
For people who are in higher education, that's a big deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
You now have tenure up there. That's wonderful. Now, we've been talking about the fact that you were involved in the Engage program, right? Or Activate, I'm sorry, was the course. And you started last August. You're about to end up this June. What has that done for you?
Well, being someone who had pretty much no business background, I took accounting as an undergrad and got a C- in it, so I knew it wasn't my field.
You hire those guys.
I do. Yeah, I will hire those
exactly.
guys. But to just learn the whole landscape of what goes on in terms of coming up with a business, and I've become much more familiar with the vocabulary involved in the components that go into a business, and I'm certainly cognizant of the fact that I'm not qualified to do a lot of jobs, but at least I understand what the jobs are.
You understand what they are.
You know, during the break, can I call you Dr. Frost?
Yes.
If you want to, you can just call me Megan.
So, it just sounds so cool.
Enjoy it.
I was asking, you're involved in the sciences, and a lot of women and young girls don't get involved in the sciences as much as I think they should.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, what was the inspiration that got you started into that, and what would you say to get other, young girls to even, give it a consideration, get it going?
Well, I would say there are two really big factors that influenced where I am today. The first one is my parents were tremendously supportive of everything that I wanted to do. And when I had crazy ideas and I said, Dad, can you saw this board just here so I could put it on this thing to make a lever? He would go out and do it for me. Very, very supportive of those kind of ideas. And in some kind of stroke of insanity, he let me build a lab in our basement when I was about a fourth grader, which I'm sure... As a parent, I would not do that to my children, but he did it anyway.
Good for him.
Which was very supportive. And I had my sixth grade science teacher was a huge inspiration for me wanting to be in the sciences. I pretty much hated doing my math homework, and I would avoid doing it. I wanted to be a historian and do some other things. And Mrs. Scaringa, my sixth grade science teacher, specifically cracked a ruler over my desk to demonstrate something with forces, and that was literally a switch that just opened up a new world for me. So,
They took this ruler and broke it over my knuckles when I was growing up.
Yeah, but
that's
different,
how I didn't become a scientist.
Purposes. Yeah,
but that's because you were naughty.
Yeah,
and the nuns who taught me knew how to use a ruler.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we here on the Internet Advisor have really promoted all sorts of programs and opportunities for young girls and young ladies to become more oriented towards the sciences, towards math, with STEM, the science, technology,
education movement.
And math, right. Engineering and math, is what it is. We promoted Girl Tech. We've had Michigan Chapter of Women in Technology on the show many times.
And we have Emily Hay, who has her very own business with us on the show.
And Emily just came back from kind of an interesting thing as well, right? To help young ladies, young women, but maybe even younger than that, really connect with technology.
Oh, sure. So today was a really interesting day in Detroit.
It actually is a gathering called Ed Camp Detroit. There's education camps all over in cities across the country, and the whole purpose is to bring together educators to share ideas. And I sat in a couple of really interesting sessions that talked about how classrooms, teachers in the classrooms, are using technology today to engage, of course, boys and girls.
Yeah, well, but the interesting connection to you then, Dr. Frost, is the whole notion of how that teacher engaged you and really gave that spark. And what a powerful thing then, Emily, for you, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. Matter of fact, you saw a couple of fourth grade teachers, was it, that really impressed you?
Yeah, in fact, they were so good. You know, their names, Brianna Hinckley and Suzanne Gibbs. They're both Michigan educators. And they hosted a session called Engaging Students in Reading Using Technology. So what I thought was really interesting was they just talked about ways that kids discover books today. So, you know, they've got the book, and in their classroom, their fourth graders will use Prezi, which Prezi is like, you know, PowerPoint on steroids. And the kids will use Prezi to promote the book. So then there's a little bit of a buzz about, well, maybe we should read this book.
That's fascinating.
And if you've never seen a presentation in Prezi, you got to go do it. You'll not want to use PowerPoint ever again.
That's interesting. That's fascinating.
Cool. And then they talked about, so once the kids read the book, instead of doing a book report, they do book trailers on iMovie.
I love
it. They make movies. It's so exciting.
That is exciting to be used to use that technology to capture kids' imagination. And it's like somebody captured your imagination, Dr. Frost, those many years ago. Not that many years ago. It doesn't look like that many years ago for you. But in any case, just to put things back into framework, Inforum is the organization that is kind of the overall umbrella under which these programs like Engage and Activate, the course that you've been in, are there. Emily, you joined Inforum. What brought you to that?
I actually attended a luncheon where there was a speaker that caught my interest and, you know, paid my admission and went and sat in the audience and was blown away by the speaker herself. But then when I went to the roster of events happening through Inforum, it was a no-brainer. I had to join.
Well, if any of you are out there who would like to engage a young woman or somebody you know in the whole process of developing these talents and interests, there's going to be the 51st Inforum Annual Conference that will be taking place this month, May 21st. And I'm not sure exactly where it takes place, but we've got a link on our homepage. If you go to internetadvisor.net, you can find all the details there, including how to register for it. And you want to join if you know somebody who's a young person who's involved in this. You are a woman involved in business yourself. You want to find out more about how you can, for instance, like as a scientist, Dr. Frost, you knew you needed some help in this area, getting the tutoring in that. And you signed up for
it. Yeah, absolutely. It was wonderful to meet just really concise, put-together programs, so we got all the components rapid-fire coming at us. And then in November, we had some presentations from people who have businesses that are already about to be launched, and you saw their complete business presentation, and it was all of a sudden I thought, oh, I can do that, because one, I understand the science, and two, now I see where all these pieces that we were putting together have come together to make this.
That's exciting. Yeah. How did you become part of the program? Did you have to apply for it?
Yeah, we applied for it. And
through Inforum. Is it through Inforum? Yes, it's through Inforum. Okay.
And we, you fill out the application, you wrote a little bit about your background and why you're interested in doing it, and then we had a phone interview with the people that were organizing it and kind of putting together the class of people that are in the program. So,
Since birthdays are on my mind, what a great birthday gift to give them a year's worth of Inforum dues or to get them to a seminar or to a class.
These ladies involved and promote and encourage them. Inforum, an excellent organization. Folks, if you want to find out more about this, go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net. There are links to Inforum, and you'll find out also about that conference coming up. Dr. Frost, thank you so much for being here in our studios. Back in just a moment with Mike Brennan. It's the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown. Back from my roving days. Ed Rudell is off. And Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and Emily Hay, our social media expert, are in studio. And with us, as we have every week, we've got Mike Brennan on the line with MichiganTechnologyNews.com. And by the way, Mike, I think I need to thank you, first of all, for a great contact with the folks from Inforum. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, Foster. Welcome back. I hope you had a nice vacation.
Wonderful, wonderful time. I understand you're in a little bit of a vacation yourself right now.
Yeah, I'm going to need you guys' help on this, actually, because I can't get my website to come up. I'm at Mount Pleasant, at the Mount Pleasant Meadows Racetrack. Every year I usually go to the Kentucky Derby, but this year it didn't work out. But we wanted to get a chance to bet the races because, you know, I'm not much of a gambler, but I'm pretty good with the ponies. So I'm up $500 today so far.
Oh, well, there you go.
And so I'm talking to you from my cell phone in my car, and unfortunately I can't get internet service, but there's a lot of things we can talk about.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Field me some questions from my website.
Hey, you know, Mike, you know, when just before you came on, we had the folks from Inforum on, and again, thank you for making that introduction for us. But we're talking about women doing extraordinary things, and history may be made here at the Derby.
Yeah, Rosie, and I'm probably going to butcher her last name, Naparovnik. Is riding today. She's one of 19 jockeys, and one of the horses was scratched. The race, for those that are listening live, goes off at around 6:20 today, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And if she wins, and right now she's a 15-1 shot, she would be the first woman jockey to win the Kentucky Derby.
Wow! So history could very well be made. Well, let's talk about some of the items you have in your news rundown here. By the way, folks, you can go to internetadvisor.net, click on the My Tech News or MichiganTechNews.com link, and it takes you right to his list of the news headlines of the week that he has in the MyTechNews.com column. One of the things that I saw that struck me as kind of interesting was the Michigan Senate returning film incentive funding to the $50 million level. In other words, they're kind of backing off, right? And they're putting the money back into it?
Yeah, I don't really get that. It's kind of been a political hot potato. I mean, you know, the state's budget's a bit stretched, but we're not talking a heck of a lot of money here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So originally it was 25, and then it was dumped, and it's back to 50. And now the tougher thing may be persuading the House to go for 50. But, it's really, I think we've done really well with the film industry in Michigan. It's
one
of those, you know, it's never going to be a huge industry, but it's really great for the creative class folks.
Oh,
and it shows that we can do this kinds of stuff in Michigan. Because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes along with movies.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like all the video production and graphic work and animation and all that other jazz.
But even beyond that, I had the pleasure of working as an extra in the George Clooney movie, I think it was called Up in the Air, in which he was in the airports a lot. And I was in Metropolitan Airport. As a matter of fact, was in one scene with him. You can see my coat. That's it.
But it is a fine-looking coat.
There was. But what was fascinating to me were the food trucks, the lighting equipment, all this stuff that's contracted out locally. It was an enormous amount of money that was being churned into the Michigan economy as well. And I know there's a lot of debate about this, but personally, I think that, and you can see this, for instance, when you visit like Toronto and Vancouver and some of those places in Canada who've done very well because of all the movies that are being shot there because of the incentives. And let's move along. One thing I saw kind of interesting in terms of technology were the Consumer Reports State of the Net showing problems.
You know, talking about the smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
Smartphones are a wonderful thing, but bear in mind that's the computer you're carrying with you.
Yep.
And the concerns were many, including most people don't have very good cyber protection on their smartphones because they're not thinking this through, right? I mean, I personally don't put anything in my smartphone. I don't do any banking, any financial stuff on my smartphone. Well, that's the other thing. If you lose your smartphone, all that data, if you've saved it, like save my password and all that jazz, then is in your smartphone, and, God, you've just given away the farm there, right?
I don't know.
That's one of the concerns.
What do you think, guys? Just kind of quickly, this is a reaction from the guys here who have I've traveled, and
whoops.
I had all that stuff on my iPhone. Em, what were you thinking?
Whoops, yeah. I didn't think about that stuff.
Yeah, I don't do electronic banking on my smartphone.
I do electronic banking on my smartphone, but only when I'm on 3G. I don't do it on Wi-Fi. Because
really?
With 3G, you're locked in, and you got more of something that's more akin to an IPN, VPN tunnel that you're working on. Where
that's
if you're
true.
On Wi-Fi, you can be tapped. Yep. And I never, ever, even on, whether it's a phone, whether it's a desktop computer, I don't store passwords.
Well, I do the online banking, but I do it when I'm on Wi-Fi on my own Wi-Fi at home.
Yeah,
so
at home you can do that.
I've secured that, and I know the level of security that I have there. Right. But, Mike, you're bringing up a very good point that a lot of people are – you know, and it's also, I think, kind of the attitude that a lot of people have now is privacy. What's privacy? You know, and they don't really think about the consequences.
Well, and Mike wrote a great article about the Electronic Frontier Foundation, really well-respected, warning that you can't trust some companies with your data.
Yeah.
Right? There's some websites out there.
Some big names,
Mike. And they're talking about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the really big thing now is everybody's harvesting your data. There are companies out there that, you know, if you search for on a website for a particular product you want to buy, and then you wonder why all of a sudden these ads are tracking you all over the internet for the same product, well, it's because they're harvesting that information. It's, you know, it's, I suppose it's all legal, but gosh, you know, Big Brother is really watching all the time now, so... Mm.
Well, I guess I have one quick question for you, Mike. What's the best practice for someone like me that, you know, I use my iPhone for everything. I use apps for everything, and I have conducted financial transactions through my iPhone. So maybe going forward, do you recommend just don't do anything from your iPhone that involves a credit card transaction?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. But, I mean, you can do things. You need to make sure you've got the right security software on your phone. I mean, people don't think about that. They do it for their laptop. They do it for their desktop. But what the heck, they don't do it for their phone. You know, I'd never do it in a Wi-Fi setting, like you're in a coffee shop or something. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the worst place in the world. I mean, I don't even like to look at my email in those places because I know somebody somewhere is reading my email along with me.
Ouch.
So you really need to be in a secure environment whenever you're doing any wireless kinds of things because, you know, it's just, especially if you're doing financial or you know, really private stuff like that. Oh, my God, the bad guys love that. So
I completely agree with Mike about you got to be very careful about what kind of things you do when you're in certain places. I don't do any electronic banking, per se, on my smartphone at all. I will at some point, but I won't yet until we get better security. I will do credit card transactions because I know that if somebody steals a credit card, by the way, every credit card out there has been breached, right? It's just a matter of will somebody actually take that information about your credit card, sell it to somebody who's actually going to use it. And then the credit card companies protect you.
Living Social, I don't know if you guys use that, 50 million users, their information was compromised in a hack last week. Living Social.
You know?
Yeah. Good thing I'm a Groupon user.
Yeah, 50 million. I mean, it's like all your private, I don't think the credit card information, but, you know, your email and whatever else you've given them that they had in their database.
The good thing there is if they get 50 million, what's the likelihood that they're going to use your email information? So, you know, while I say everything's been out there, has been compromised, breached in some way, most of it isn't being used.
Well, Mike, you're in good shape if your name happens to be Zorro and they start.
Yeah, that helps. Baker, not so good.
Yeah, you're right up on the top of the list, my friend.
Mike, thank you very much. Enjoy yourself this afternoon. MyTechNews.com. You'll find the link to that on our homepage. And there's a whole lot more there to talk about.
There sure is.
Thanks so much, Mike. Take care, and good luck this afternoon at the track. Hey, folks, no need for good luck here. If you stick around and give us a call, we'll help you. We will take on the problems that you got with your computer.
Yeah, there's no gambling here.
No gambling. If you call 800-859-0957, start calling right now. Our toll-free number, get in line, and we will get online to help you solve your computer problem. If you're having problems getting on the internet, getting around it, or maybe getting over it, 1-800-859-0WJR, 1-800-859-0957. Back with you after these words. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. That's right. This hour of the Internet Advisor is dedicated to you and your problems, finding a solution to them, helping you with that frustration with email or that virus that you just can't quite get out. Here's the number, 800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0957. Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and myself, Frost Brown, here to answer your questions again, 800-859-0957. Thank you. Delighted to have you with us in our second hour. folks are getting the idea, they're beginning to line up, and we would love to take a crack at answering your question. 800-859-0957, Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and yours truly, Foster Brown. Glad to be back in house.
We're certainly glad to have you. As I said before, we, you did such a better job.
You're like the grease on the skids. You know what I'm saying? We just put you on there and everything gets slick and smooth again.
Yeah. That oily character. I like that. Yeah.
But you know something, Foster? I wanted to talk about something, and that is that, and we were talking about this at our Mac group meeting last weekend. It's kind of my little tip of the month, and one of the tips of the month that I always like to do is, have you backed up your computer lately?
Oh, yes.
Because there's only two types of people out there when it comes to backup. It's those who have backed up or need to back up, and those who wish they backed up. And so you pick what side of that coin you want to be on.
Well, I have to tell you, by the way, that I finally made the plunge. We had a little extra money come in, and I signed up for a year of Carbonite. And it took like 4 days.
And what is Carbonite?
Carbonite is an online, if you will, cloud-based storage where it will take everything on your computer and it will store it online. I don't think it keeps the programs. Am I right, Cal? I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know how Carbonite does theirs, but I use CrashPlan, which is another online service, and it takes everything on my computer and puts it up into the cloud. And so I believe Carbonite probably does the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, by backing up the entire machine, you'll have that right. complete.
And the most
thing
important
there.
Thing is that you have that peace of mind. Because I also have a little 500-gig hard drive that I have that I attach to it as well that I use as a local backup. And so if something would happen, I have the information there at hand. But I haven't done it for a while. And it just takes a load off my mind to know. That and this had happened with this machine before. Something goes kaput. I can always reinstall because I have a Mac. I can always go back and reinstall by downloading from the iTunes store. But then it's where's all of my pictures, my data and everything else for a whole bunch of years. The podcast from the Internet Advisor are all now safely tucked away on a cloud somewhere.
And a lot of people, when they buy a computer, they don't factor in backup as part of the total package.
Yes,
and it's all part
Very
of it.
Very good point.
The reason why you have the cloud-based services are great. For one reason, and one reason is that you don't have to think about, did I back up? Once you set it, as long as you're attached to the Internet, it's doing it automatically
That's
for
like
you.
That's like total disaster.
Exactly.
Recovery.
But the local backups, like you talked about, are great to have for another reason. Right. Even if you have a cloud-based backup, to get it off the cloud back into your machine, if you had to pull it all back, takes days,
yeah.
So that's the reason why you want to also have a local backup as well, so that you can be able to restore your machine, get it back up and running in a short period of time.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
it's a complete package that you have to have.
Yeah, and you're right. There's a certain peace of mind that comes now that if I spill another cup of coffee, as I have been known to do, or take my phone for a swim, that it's all there. It's all backed up.
And you don't need another piece of technology right now, so you probably won't. Not that we, accuse you of that.
I have to say, I am, and I've been reading some interesting commentary on this, I am kind of really disappointed with Apple, the way iPhone is going, because I am finding a need, having used the Windows Phone with the bigger screen, I am really looking, it'll be, I think, this fall when I'll have the contract comes around again. I may go to an Android-based phone simply because of the size of the phone. And to be very honest with you, I was just reading this the other day. The systems are pretty compatible. In other words, you'll get pretty much the same thing on both sides. And they both have their own ecosphere, if you will.
I'll just say one thing.
I knew.
Before you make that choice.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying not do it. But before you make that choice, I'll only say one thing, and that's iOS 7. It's coming in September.
I hope.
It's going to be different.
I hope.
And
I
so,
really
you know, it's something to look at.
Well, that's why I've got till this fall, and I'll go along through the summer with my iPhone 4. But I am at a place right now where it's getting harder and harder to read that small screen. Gary, you have the bigger one. You have the 5, right?
I have the 5. It's a little bigger. It's still smaller than most of the newer Android phones. Right. And there's some good things about Android. I have an iPhone, and I like my iPhone. But, the iPhone 5 basically caught up to Android, Android's now moving a little farther ahead. Yeah. I think, you know, the next iPhone will catch back up again. There's some good things that you like, and there's some things that iPhone's clearly better.
So. Two things involved in that. The camera, by the way, I've heard as iPhone still has a really superior camera right now. But two things for me is the size of the screen is going to be significant, and iOS 7, which, by the way, folks, is the operating system for the mobile devices like the iPad, the iPods, and the iPhones.
Right. Because when you sit down and really think about it, they're going to have to do something really compelling with the operating system.
Yes.
Because from a hardware standpoint, like Gary has said, a lot of people are starting to drift toward the larger phones, which is weird to me because I never figured out why I want something bigger to stick in my pocket.
And I don't, by the way. I like the smaller
phone. I do.
Yeah.
From traveling, I would really have loved to have had a bigger screen.
Well, yeah, you only want a bigger screen because you can't carry the fishbowl with you. But, I mean,
it's called bifocals, you know.
No, it's called get a tablet. Because, see, with a tablet, you could have done.
Yes.
You could have Skyped your phone calls.
Sure. No, you're absolutely right. But then the tablets also have their limitations. Anyhow, all right, folks, enough of our chatter. Time for your chatter. 800-859-0957. That's the number. And as we say, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And even if it's a simple question, we love them. But they also help other people, too. 800-859-0957.
And Ed Rudell.
That's right. That's the number. And let's get right to somebody who's lined up and ready to go. And welcome Dennis from Almont. Dennis, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
I got a question about a website I found that streams baseball games. And every time I go to use it, I didn't have any problem with it last year, but this year they want you to install or update your Flash player. So when I did that, I got a virus threat. My antivirus software picked it up. But every time I use the site, it asks to update my Flash player, and I just X out of it, and I don't have any problems after that. But what is happening here?
So where did you download the your upgrade for your Flash software?
I didn't download anything. Control when I go to uninstalled programs, Adobe is on there, but when I go to all programs on the start menu, I have nothing. No Flash player.
No, you wouldn't necessarily see it there. But
when you download it, did you say you downloaded the Flash player one time, the first time?
Well, they asked you to update it, so I clicked, yes and all
okay.
that.
Okay.
Now,
when I did, I got a virus threat.
All right, now issues, yeah.
So that was why I was asking, do you know which site you downloaded that upgrade from?
It was just a generic Flash.
It was a warning that came up when you were trying to access the thing, right?
Right.
No? You don't think so, Gary?
Okay.
Well, no, I'm asking you don't think so.
So he downloaded an update.
Mm-hmm.
It probably wasn't from Adobe, and that's my concern.
Ah, all right.
Okay.
Well,
was it from the Adobe site?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I would suggest you do is that if you keep getting that message every time you go to stream the baseball games, what I would do is you go to adobe.com and you go on the download side and download Flash directly from Adobe.
So, Calvin, let me ask you, would you delete Flash first and then try to install it again?
If he has Flash on there right now, yeah, I would delete it first, reboot the machine.
I tried doing that. I uninstalled it.
Okay.
I rebooted the machine. I went to Adobe's website to try to install their Flash player, and it would not install.
So what I recommend is that when you uninstall any program, and Flash is a great example because it's a plug-in program, when you uninstall, you power down. You power back up, right? You power back down again the second time and power back up. And the reason for that is there are little connections that remain live to certain programs. And when you uninstall the program, you can't uninstall those little connections, that little piece of code that's sitting in your registry. And then if you don't get it out, when you go to try to reinstall Flash again from Adobe, it'll see them there and it'll wonder what's going on, and it may stop you from installing. If you take and power down the second time, what happens is now they have no connection to the program. They'll actually be removed.
Dennis, what kind of antivirus program software are you using, by the way?
I use AVG, and I run Malwarebytes also.
And you run Malwarebytes for the viruses. Okay, Cal?
Okay, what you want to do is Dennis, correct?
Right.
Yes.
You want to go back to Adobe.com, and they have an uninstall program for Flash. Download that uninstaller. And then when you run that uninstaller, make sure you don't have any browsers open, because they tie into that. Run that uninstaller, and after it uninstalls, then reinstall the Flash program from Adobe, and you'll be fine.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and by the way, check back in with us.
Go ahead.
I was going to say,
I was just going to say something. It sounds like maybe other people have had the same problem.
Yeah, that's the reason why they created that.
We used to find that with Zone Alarmer, I think, and some of the other ones. Norton, you had to go. When you went to their site and used their uninstaller, it really got all the stuff rooted up. Because, as you said, very often the Flash stuff is a plug-in in a browser.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Let's go on to Jim from Leonard, Michigan, up in the North Woods as well. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well. I bought a brand new Windows 8 Hewlett Packard computer.
Yeah.
I had experience with Windows all the way from Windows 95 and a number of computers. Windows 7 has a backup application in it, but I am unable to find it in Windows 8. Do you know where it does it exist?
Yeah, it does. Have you just simply gone to the start page where you have the tabs and typed in the word backup?
No, I have not tried that.
Do that, and I'll tell you why. This is the new thing that Windows 8 is doing. I had the same problems when I first installed it. The interesting thing about Windows 8 is that it actually is better in some ways in terms of searching for stuff, because you simply go to that start page and type whatever's on your little heart. And then it will show you settings, it will show you files, and it will show you applications. And what you'll probably find is under one of those settings, the instructions for using the backup. Right. What I understand the backup to be, they just described it differently, I think. My experience, at least. I have a little 500 gig hard drive that I use with my wife's computer that I have 8 on. And it's described as something else. It's called like a restore files. In other words, it will store versions of different files as well as backing everything up.
So they don't need you to have a backup. They need you to have a restore.
Yeah.
I want to back it up to an external hard drive.
Yes. Yes.
Will this thing do that?
Yes. It will. Yes. It will. You'll identify a drive that you want to put these restore files onto, and then you do that. But again, go to the start page. And for anybody who's using Windows 8 out there, that really is kind of the magical thing about it anymore. You don't go to a search button that's down near the start button on the lower left. You go to the page that shows up with all the colorful tiles on it, that Metro page. Type in backup. And then, Cal, you have something else?
Yeah, if you go to the start and then type in, I believe, either backup or file history.
That's it.
It's
going to
bring up the file history panel. And on there, it will have... I'm sorry?
File history? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
File history. And then when it brings up that panel, it'll have a little button on there that says file history is off. When you turn it on, it will give you the option to be able to do a image of your computer to back it up.
Okay.
That's great. I don't know why they hide it. They've
made it a lot. There's a whole lot of stuff we'd like to ask. Matter of fact, in the coming month, what I want to do is concentrate, if I can, on doing a regular thing on Windows 8. Because a lot of the calls that come into us, a lot of the questions we get in email are about Windows 8.
Well, because it's such a change, right?
Yep.
And it's probably a good change. And it's not the end. It's an interim as they move to a couple of the other operating systems that we're now hearing about online.
Yeah.
But Cal really had three great tips last week about using the Windows button and E, I, or D.
And, right.
I think if you know those three things, that gets you a long way down the road of not needing that start button anymore.
Yeah, with the Windows interface, with the new Windows 8 interface, if you the three major things you usually do on a computer, you can do just by knowing to use the Windows key and the letters D-I-E, or die. If you do a Windows D, that'll give you the desktop. If you do a Windows I, that'll give you Internet Explorer. And if you do Windows E, that'll give you Windows Explorer. With those three, you can be able to navigate around
the computer.
And Windows
Explorer is like the old start menu that you'd be able to search for a program.
Well, Explorer is like the old, it gives you the file structure of the computer.
Right, exactly.
So it's part of your computer where IE is.
Or you can do another one you can do is hit that Windows button and C, and it'll bring up the charms. And that's also where you'll find the settings in there as well. So we're going to do more on that. But thank you very much, Jim, for asking that question.
Can I ask one other quick question?
If you hang on the phone, we'll be with you in just a moment, okay? And we're going to take a quick pause. For the rest of you calling in, here's a number for you, 800-859-0957. Maybe you're struggling with Windows 8, or you have a problem with another system. We've got Gary Baker, Cal Karsten, myself here in studio to help you. 800-859-0957. Mr. Eddie Rudell is on vacation. I'm back. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker here in studio. Cal Karsten, good to have you guys standing by here to answer questions. And you heard the magic number before. I think a lot of people are out enjoying this beautiful weather.
Yeah, they should be.
They could take their cell phone outside with them. They can take their laptop outside with them. And they can still call us at what magic number?
800-859-0957. Jim from Leonard, by the way, we were just talking with him, was asking a question about finding the BIOS. And I found something interesting here in the break, checking this out myself, Cal. It says that traditionally computers displayed a message like press F2 to enter setup at the beginning of the boot process, and then pressing the key entered the computer's BIOS. However, Windows 8 hardware uses the UEFI replacement for the traditional BIOS, like Macs do. And it says some solid-state drives equipped with Windows 8 PCs boot so fast, you'll only have 200 milliseconds to press any key combination.
You're just going to have to press fast.
Yeah.
As soon as it starts, hit me like one of those game shows. Make sure that you hit it fast enough.
It's Family Feud for computers.
Oh, man. In any case, you could check out online, just like I did, asking about the BIOS. There are some of those things about Windows 8 that we're all kind of working our way through. As a matter of fact, we have Arlene from Ypsilanti with a question about Windows 8. Hi, Arlene. How can we help you here?
I need all the help I can get.
We do too sometimes.
Well, I have a new computer with Windows 8, and my problem is I had Quicken, which I really, really loved, okay? And I cannot bring my old program up. I bought a new Quicken CD, put it in, and it's totally unsatisfactory. And I talked to the powers that be in India, and they couldn't help me either. And everybody, I talked to the Geek Squad, and they're all telling me that my old program is not compatible with Windows 8, and I don't like the Quicken that I have now.
Now, is the new Quicken? Does it work out of that Metro style? You know, the one where you click on the colorful tiles at the beginning.
I don't know.
I was just curious because I've heard complaints of other people saying that the stuff that's been developed for Metro is not as good as the one that's on the simple desktop, where you would open up and then you would go to the, you know how to get to the desktop, right?
Yes.
I think, isn't there a compatibility mode in the desktop?
Well, wait a minute. The first thing is, what version of Quicken did you use before that you loved?
Yeah, there you go.
That's the problem. I think it was it was old, probably 95.
Oh, excuse me then.
Okay, so now are you using the starter version of Quicken 2013 or the full version?
It's the full version. Okay. You know, it has a bunch of graphs and how much money you spend. And I don't care about
that. So Quicken, you know, they've chosen to upgrade just their Quicken 2013 version to be used with Win 8, and you're saying you don't like the Quicken 2013?
Not at all. Okay. Well, see, my primary interest is this, putting my stocks in. mm-hmm. and you could run the tab right across, you know, mm-hmm. Your dividends and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the new Quicken's 8, or the Quicken program I have, they just have a little column over on the left-hand side to put your accounts in. I don't care about that.
Yeah. Mm. Now, have you talked to Quicken at all?
Oh, yes.
And have they given you any hope?
No. Well, the only help they gave me was they told me I could take it back and get my money back. Well, I don't
Excuse
want
me.
That. I want
no, you need something no, that's you that's compatible with Win8.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, here's what the problem is, and I sympathize with you, but I'm going to have to tell you that if you are using Quicken for like Windows 95, you've gotten used to an interface that you're very comfortable with and
yeah.
you've been using for years and yeah. years and years.
Yeah. Yeah.
The problem is that time went by while you were being comfortable, and now it's a new world, and you're like, oh, what the heck is this all about?
Yeah, and Intuit's just not supporting that yeah. version anymore, right? With they're not making that version of their product compatible with Win8.
Correct.
But, yeah. but see, my question is, I can see it in there. Okay, I can see, you know, my when they downloaded the disk, I can see my, you know, when they loaded into my new computer, I can see the Quicken program in there, but I can't access it and I can't bring it up.
That's because that program is probably was not written for 32-bit or I should say a 64-bit machine. And with the newer machine running at 64-bit, the old 32 or maybe even 16-bit right. application won't run.
But isn't there a compatibility mode? That...
No, I think that I don't think it's going to go back that far.
No, you're
the
right.
Version
you're
she
right,
has
right.
now, what she might be able to pull off, and we're getting techie, and I hate to say this like that, but the only other way she can get around it is to get bring up a Windows virtual machine set up for XP.
Oh, that's right.
And then she could load it into that XP virtual machine and run it. But you probably need a geek to come over and help you out with that.
But how could I do that if I don't have? You know, I don't have the disk, you know, when I'm
so,
saying.
If you don't have the original disk to install it with,
no. Well,
you're going to be out of luck.
Yeah.
Because unless you buy it on eBay or someplace like that.
What did you do with the old machine?
Well, they took it. My brother handled this for me. They took the old machine and they took the disk and he said they destroyed it.
Wow.
Well, that's good because you didn't lose
Wait
any
till
primary.
Wait the next family gathering yeah. and have a little intense conversation.
He wanted to make sure that none of your information got out, so that was good.
There you go.
Unfortunately,
right.
you can't get any of your information back.
You could buy
this on eBay.
But my problem is that I can see it in there. You know what I mean? I can see the Quicken, but I can't bring it up.
Yep.
So
yeah, you're right. You can't bring it up.
How about, here's something else that you can try, okay? Mm-hmm. And it may cost you a couple of dollars, not a lot. Mm-hmm. Or there's two ways to go. Number one, you can go on YouTube, and they have an introduction to Quicken Online that you can look at on YouTube for free.
What is it, YouTube?
YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And just
T-U-B-E,
search for, yeah. So yeah. just search for Quicken Online on YouTube, and you can watch one of their tutorials out there. The other thing is there is a company called Lydia.com or Lynda.com, I should say, and that's spelled Lynda. They have tons of instructional things on there, and one of the things they have on there is a Quicken tutorial. And it may cost you, I don't know, $10 to watch it online. That might be able to glue some of the stuff together and make you be able to understand the interface better so that you'll be able to do the things you do. Because there might be a couple of things you could just click that will give you the information to put it on screen the way you want
enough.
To see it.
Yeah. Close enough.
Yeah,
maybe.
There may be views, for instance,
right.
view modes that you're not familiar with. Your data is there. Am I right, Arlene? Is your data there?
Well, you know, I can see it, but I can't bring it up. And like the new Quicken program,
yeah.
I mean, I've been backwards and forwards on that.
I went through that with QuickBooks, which...
Yeah, well, they don't go back and they're
they don't
bring the compatibility.
Exactly.
Up.
I've heard people, and what they do is they create a new ending for it. For me, one time it was .qbw went to .qb something else,
yeah.
and suddenly all my data didn't work. And
why do
yeah.
they do that?
Because they can.
And because they'll get you to upgrade. And in this case, you don't want to upgrade.
No.
So, Cal, actually, if you can't get used to the new Quicken, right, the Quicken 2013,
Well,
which is...
My problem is, like I said, there's a little column on the left where it says you can put in your accounts. Well, then, you know, it has no format where I could run, like, my stocks out, you know, dividends, money spent.
Well, but some of that may be, Arlene, and it's been said before here, that there are really tools there that you're not familiar with that might allow you to see more of that. But I'm not Quicken familiar should, with that Quicken. So
yeah,
I can't
but Quicken pick. Should help her with that.
Yes.
Right? And as Cal was saying, you know, maybe a tutorial or something, it'll give you enough information. You go, okay, I see how I can do this and get a view that I like. It may not be exactly, probably wouldn't be exactly the right view, but it might be closer to what you want. And that may be good enough. The other thing that Cal mentioned, and Cal, we can go back over this again. We could put a virtual machine on this.
What is that? What
Let's explain
mean?
That for people. That's a...
Or she couldn't probably. I mean, I shouldn't say she can't. She'd have to learn. Arlene would have to learn quite a bit. She could take it someplace.
Or she could go back to the fine folks who took away the other computer
her
for
brother.
Her.
Brother. Yeah.
And he might know how to do that for her and get her set up.
Would you explain a virtual machine? Because I think some people are listening to that.
Right, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
No, it's real simple. Imagine being able to put a computer inside of a computer. In other words, using software, it creates the environment like it's an older computer, like an XP machine.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be able to run that type of information inside of your computer already.
And I think there's one out there that's free called VirtualBox, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, but there's a couple.
Yeah.
Some are a little better than others. The problem she will have is at some point, and Cal's right, she'll need XP to run something that old on Quicken.
Yeah.
The problem is XP is not going to be supported.
Look at the online tutorials first.
Yeah.
Because the answer may be a click away for you.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I've done a lot of clicks.
Okay. Yeah.
But follow those tutorials because they may help you, and particularly look under view. Okay, Arlene?
Okay, well, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Yes, and the number for your question, 800-859-0957. I want to thank some of the folks who helped make this program happen that you don't get to meet here on the air, and that's Scott Iometta, who's our board operator. Thank you very much. Rich Zizinski, who rides shotgun back there, thank you. And, of course, our lady of the telephones, Annie Nichols. Thank you very much for being that pleasant sound on the phones. And, by the way, you want to talk to her and then talk to us, 800-859-0957 is the number. We still have time.
And as we've said many times, you can hear her smile over
yes,
the phone.
Yes, you certainly can. Now, listen, one of the things that Gary brought up during the break, and just quickly, is important. If, for instance, like our friend who called in, Arlene, just a moment ago, and maybe a lot of the things that we were saying were a little complicated to her, but she has a brother or a friend or son, grandson, whoever, can listen to our podcast and get an idea of the problem she's trying to explain or, you know, describe, and then some of our response to that, that may help them then be able to figure out a way of helping
That's
them.
That's right. So, she doesn't have to remember right. what we said and try to translate it to her brother. Her brother can listen directly to the podcast.
By Sunday night, we will put that up there. Very quickly, one other thing is we've mentioned this before, and we got some other folks calling in here. One of the things we mentioned before is that YouTube, that's U as in YouTube, is a great place to go for instructionals
yeah,
of
tutorials.
Any kind.
Yep.
Tutorials of any kind.
Caveat. Just make sure that when you look at those instructionals, you look at them with a grain of salt, because unless they're coming from a company that actually does that product, you want to, you know, you just want to make sure.
Yeah. But also, what I love is some of these young, you can hear in their voice, the younger guys around yeah. there, girls who are running through the steps very nicely and simply.
And for the most part, they're right.
Yeah.
But once in a while, it might be wrong information. That's just, and they don't intend, most of the time, they're not intending to give you wrong information. It's just not accurate for what you have.
But I did get the drywall hung.
All right, let's go to Paul calling us from Pontiac. Hey, Paul, how can we help you with your Dell computer XP?
Yeah, this is a laptop, Foster. Hi, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Hey, Paul.
It's a older laptop, obviously running XP, and when I unplug it and take it away and plug it in someplace else because the battery shine on the thing. The cursor wants to do its own thing. It just kind of runs away, and it likes to run off to a corner and disappear off the screen.
Now, this is you're talking about the cursor being connected to a mouse that's plugged into it?
That was an option I tried, but without a mouse plugged into it, it's just kind of running around. It's got the little joystick deal in the middle, and sometimes I can almost control it, but
It gets shy.
Really
it runs.
Difficult.
It runs and hides. Hey, so you know, Shane.
It does. It hides. And plugging a mouse into it, trying to disable the laptop deal, and just plugging a mouse into it didn't seem to work either.
Okay. So here's.
But I took it back home and plugged it in, and after a day or two, it settled down.
So here's the suggestion.
I'm afraid to take it out of the house.
So Paul, here's an here's a suggestion. A guy that helps us out often here on the show, Shane Hamlin, is down at Fort Wayne this weekend. In fact, today. and Fort Wayne has a fundraiser going on. They are going on a ghost hunt. So anybody listening, they want to go tonight to go hunt ghosts. You might want to take this down and see if they can perform an exorcism
Hello?
Or something.
My
on
machine
it.
Is possessed. No, I don't think it's quite possessed.
Okay, I was a way to plug Shane's goings on son of Fort Wayne today. This is Fort Wayne in Detroit. This is the actual fort that's.
Yep.
A couple hundred
Detroit
years
River.
Old.
Hey, Paul, on your
that would not be Indiana.
No,
it's not Fort Wayne, Indiana. Thank you.
Paul, on your XP laptop there, do you have a little trackpad on the front of it where you can put your finger down and be able to move the mouse around?
I do.
Okay, and you said that you plugged in an external mouse and you attempted to shut that trackpad off?
Yes.
Were you successful in shutting it off? At least from the software.
Kind of hard to tell because the cursor wasn't really, cooperating.
Okay. So what I'm going to suggest that you try and do is this. Do you also have that little red dot in the middle of the keyboard for moving the cursor around with as well?
Yeah, and if I worked real hard at that and kind of put both hands on that little dot and pulled as hard as I could, I might be able to find where that thing went for a second or two, and then it'd run away again.
Do you know how these are adjusted?
Well, what I was going to suggest for him to do was to, instead of trying to use the mouse to get to where you want it to do, hit your Windows key and then go down the menu with the arrow keys till you get to Control Panel, and then go through the, once you get in the Control Panel, use your Tab key to tab to the mouse settings, and then hit the Enter key when you're on the mouse setting and attempt to turn it off that way using the arrow keys to move around with. Once you, because what I believe your problem is, your trackpad sensitivity has gone haywire.
Right.
And anything that gets in the area of it will make that thing move around, like your wrist or whatever. And so you need to be able to work your way manually using the keyboard to get to the Control Panel to shut that off.
Why does it like to work when it's in my house and been sitting for a day or two, but when I take it on a road trip, it doesn't like it?
See, I think this is the ghost part.
Because I think in your house, the humidity is just right where it doesn't create a static electricity field whenever you put your arm over top that mouse pad. But when you go to other places, the humidity gets in such a configuration that it creates that static electricity that creates that situation for you.
Okay.
Well, that's one example. Now, what if he wanted to take and reinstall the drivers for that? Can he do that?
Yeah, he could do that, but he's not going to be able to do it because he has no control right now. So I'm just getting him to the point where...
Well, I do because it's at home right now. But...
So okay. It works at home.
So at home, go ahead and turn off that trackpad now. And then once you get that turned off, then if you want to reload the drivers for that trackpad, go to the Dell website, pull them down, and reload them again. But I don't think that's going to fix it.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Okay.
I think he has a hardware problem.
Yeah, sound like that. All right. Thank you for your question, Paul.
Is there any cleaning that would help?
You could try unscrewing that little red dot on the keyboard.
The eraser head.
And
the
eraser head, you take a cotton swab with some alcohol on the swab, and then just wipe it around in there, and then screw that back down, reboot the machine, and see if that will fix it after wiggling it around a little bit.
Okay, Paul, I hope we can give you some help with that, because dealing with poltergeists like that is really nasty. quick thing, guys. I just got an email from somebody who was listening to us and didn't call but left this in. I want to answer this because I think it's extremely important. I've been a PayPal user for years. Now I'm receiving an email telling me I must verify my account so I can continue to use it. Part of the process involves them depositing two small amounts to my bank account after I provide my personal information. He says, this supposedly verifies my account. Doesn't sound right to me. You're right, Lynn. It isn't.
It isn't right.
I just said to him, please delete that. Now, I just had the same thing happen to me this week, only they said, we've had an expense of such and such on your PayPal account. Well, it was more than I had in my account. I knew it wasn't right. Anyway, you can send that. That is a phishing scam. You can send it to something called Spoof, S-P-O-O-F, at PayPal.com. And that they will take that and try to track it down because these are the bad guys. So, Len, anybody else out there getting something spontaneously from supposedly PayPal, do not give them any information.
More stuff gets lost because of a con that happens than technology failing and people getting in that way. So
exactly. Hey, for the gentleman calling from Geneva, Ohio, hang on the line. We'll be right back there. We'll talk with you after we get off here because we've run out of time. Thank you so much again for all the folks who have joined us here. Don't forget Sunday night, which is just a little bit away from here. For those who are listening to us live on our flagship station, WJR, I will post the podcast of the program. The rest of you listening to us through the Michigan Talk Network, we're delighted to have you there listening to us. And don't forget that you can get your questions in as well through email. Simply go to the Contact Us form on our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net. Have a great week. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisors Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.